tomorrow. Got to get political. You're tuned to listener-sponsored, commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. Coming up right after this announcement, Off the Hook with Emmanuel Goldstein.
1998 is the 100th year of American intervention in Puerto Rico.
100 years under U.S. sovereignty.
100 años de presencia militar estadounidense que se cumplen ahora el 25 de julio.
A date that 100 years ago brought in the Stars and Stripes in Puerto Rico with an accompanying promise of democracy and equal rights for our people.
When 100 years have passed by and the United States faces the fact that it is the last colonial power in the world, certain people in the United States start asking themselves questions about what should happen regarding Puerto Rico.
July 25th marks the 100th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Puerto Rico. WBAI will commemorate this historic event with special programming beginning at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, July 25th. Tune in for a whole series of specials, including the documentary Puerto Rico, Reflections on the Oldest Colony, plus live coverage of the UN rally against U.S. colonialism in Puerto Rico. So tune in all day July 25th, beginning at 10:30 a.m., only on WBAI 99.5 FM.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI in New York, where the time is, wow, the time is 8:02. We're late, so it's time for Off the Hook. Everybody, this is Off the Hook, the exciting program about exciting things that happen in the exciting world of cyberspace and all that kind of thing. Phil's here with us this week.
Good evening.
How you doing? We had an exciting week. We're having an exciting week. We have exciting months ahead of us. It's just going to keep going on and not stopping. We have news from the demonstration last week in front of Miramax, and boy, what a lot of fun that was.
That was great.
It was amazing. It was more amazing than even I could have imagined.
Almost a religious experience.
Almost religious. I wouldn't go so far as to say religious because I don't know. I don't know if we want to get into that area, but it was something else, something really, really cool. Okay, first a couple of quick headlines before we get into this. WIPO has passed in the House. We suggest people go to the Loft website to look this up, www.l0pht.com, right?
Yeah, I have the same one in front
okay.
of me.
Soon it will be a federal crime to reverse engineer protection mechanisms. Are you interested in the encryption used in real-world software? Want to see how strong it is? Or more importantly, how well implemented it is? Well, don't take a peek because you will be breaking the law, fined up to $2,500. Are you a consulting business whose bread and butter is figuring out how these things really work? Don't bother selling this information to clients or you could be fined up to $1 million. Digital content providers like ourselves will not be able to open up the hood of the encryption mechanisms that we buy to protect software we distribute. We are not allowed to see if the mechanisms are flawed or easily circumvented. The law says just say no. No research, no investigation, no reverse engineering. If we just make it illegal to look under the hood, no one will. We know that this way of protecting systems is security by obscurity. There are ways to build systems that are truly secure by making it a crime to pick apart systems, any systems. The legislature is harboring shoddy protection mechanisms and making it a crime to be a whistleblower. You know, the real shame about all this is that we should be devoting a lot more time to that. We could devote a whole show, many shows, to that issue, but because of all the things that we have to cover, we don't have really more time than that to spend on it. It's a pretty sobering thing, ominous future, and I'm sure we'll have time in the future to talk about this more. Of course, that'll be after it's law for a while. It's been out on the net for a while, though.
They've been talking about it for quite some time.
We mentioned it a couple of times before.
Yeah.
What else? I see this Electronic Frontier Foundation.
No, I didn't see that.
Electronic Frontier Foundation has raised the level of honesty in crypto politics by revealing that the data encryption standard, DES, is insecure. The U.S. government has long pressed industry to limit encryption to DES and even weaker forms without revealing how easy it is to crack. Continued adherence to this policy would put critical infrastructures at risk. Society should choose a different course. To prove the insecurity of DES, EFF built the first unclassified hardware for cracking messages encoded with it. On Wednesday of last week, the EFF DES cracker, which was built for less than $250,000, easily won RSA Laboratories DES Challenge 2 contest and a $10,000 cash prize. It took the machine less than 3 days to complete the challenge, shattering the previous record of 39 days set by a massive network of tens of thousands of computers. The research results are fully documented in a book published last week, actually, by EFF and O'Reilly and Associates entitled Cracking DES: Secrets of Encryption Research, Wiretap Politics, and Chip Design. Producing a workable policy for encryption has proven a very hard political challenge. We believe that it will only be possible to craft good policies if all the players are honest with one another and the public. That, according to John Gilmore, EFF co-founder and project lead. That's the guy that, is in a film Takedown.
Yeah.
We know him as the rat bastard who tried to stop Shimomura from finding Kevin Mitnick.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that later. When the government won't reveal relevant facts, says Gilmore, the private sector must independently conduct the research and publish the results so that we can all see the social trade-offs involved in policy choices. So that's something else that I think is kind of fun. And speaking of fun, you hear about this this Virgin website thing?
My firsttime.com or our first time, something like that, yeah.
Which supposedly got hacked a couple of days ago
yeah.
after it was revealed to be a fraud.
And this was a couple or something that they were going to catalog their first intimate experience or
teenage,
something like that?
A teenage couple, yes. Supposedly the two so-called 18-year-old virgins slated to have sex live on the net for August 4th. Never intended to go through with it, says Seth Wojcicki, founder of the Internet Entertainment Group. IEG, an adult site provider, has loudly pulled out of a no-cost sponsorship deal with the site. Friday afternoon, IEG posted images of documents at one of its own sites, Club Love, to support its claim that the Our First Time site is a money-making publicity hoax. Well, gee whiz, that would be a first for the internet, wouldn't it? So that was kind of revealed to be what it was. And then a couple days later, while the NetaMedia community absorbs Friday's confirmation that the Our First Time Teen Virgins webcast was a hoax, the site that promised to host the bogus event was taking its lumps from a hacker bent on revenge. Supposedly the whole website got deleted too, which I don't think that's too cool.
No, but that's pretty rare too. Most of the time they don't do that.
It is. Sunday afternoon, the site's homepage was replaced with a message explaining that the whole thing was a scam. These scum simply wanted to capitalize on the media-doped people of our country, read Magic FX's message on the altered Our First Time homepage. The media loves a controversy, spelled wrong, don't they? Well, now, don't you, yes, you, feel stupid now that you, too, were duped. There was never going to be any sex show. On August 4th, the couple was going to decide to abstain after all you perverts paid your entry fee. Yes, the site was going to be turned into a pay site. So, Magic FX also used the homepage to send a message to the hoax's perpetrator, Ken Tipton, who used the alias Oscar Welles in an apparent tribute to director Orson Welles. This sick scum Oscar wanted to make himself appear equal to Orson Welles' genius. Well, bud, it backfired. Turn off the pornos, Oscar, go read a book, and get a life, the message read. So that's where that stands. Now, this is something that that comes out of Long Island. And this just goes to show that truth is stranger than fiction, okay? There's apparently this task force in the Suffolk County Police Department that deals with computer hackers. Listen to this quote that comes out of a conference that they had. And this is the guy who said this is the person in charge of it, the Suffolk County Police Department, Detective Sergeant Robert Hack.
Robert Hack.
I don't make this up. I mean, this is proof that...
How ironic.
I cannot possibly make this up. This is real life. The guy's name is Hack. He's talking about hackers. If you think you were violated, you probably were, said Hack. On Long Island, there was a group calling themselves the 2600 Club.
I've heard of those guys.
They publish magazines. They give out hacking tools. They have conferences and meetings. Yeah, they are out there all around us, infiltrating.
They're walking among
possible.
Us.
They could be walking right up to your door right now. Who knows, man? These people are everywhere. Hackers, they're like cockroaches, you know? You can't stop them.
You squish one and 10 take place as well.
This Robert Hack guy, I mean, whoa. I mean, do you think he got hired to be the hacker expert because of that being his name? Or?
I would like to know his background, and I'd certainly want to know. Now,
I think this could be a hoax. This could be another, you know, Our First Time type of hoax here.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, come on, that guy's name, you know, Oscar Welles, all right, that was obvious.
Yeah.
But Robert Hack, I mean, that's too obvious.
So it's a task force now that's devoted just to
apparently they
is
there's so much high-tech crime on Long Island, and it's all because of hackers that they feel they have to do this.
I'd like to call up and find out. I'd like to speak to Mr. Hack.
Yeah, and thanks to the person who faxed us that newsletter we weren't supposed to see.
Yeah.
But we always see them in the end, just like we always see the scripts we're not supposed to see.
Yeah, we have a new copy of the script,
A brand new copy of the takedown script. We're going to get to that in just a moment, too, after we talk about the demonstration. There was a program on CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Company, Corporation, or Conglomerate, or whatever they call themselves. It was actually a repeat from a January show, and it was about hackers and their public perception. It was about Kevin Polson, who, as you may know, now works for ZDTV and has done a bunch of articles on Kevin Mitnick, really good articles, too.
I was going to just say, they're really good articles.
Except he's not allowed to touch a computer himself because he's still... trouble.
I'd like to see the process on how he does all these articles and how he views
them. He must have to type on a typewriter and then give it to somebody that scans it into, you know, a
machine.
Maybe
they tell him about it.
He can't even see the website. I wonder if he can stand across the room and look at the website from a distance.
If he can watch TV, maybe if they put on a TV monitor.
If they put it on the TV set, he's looking at the, yes.
But what if it's web TV? See, there. I don't know. There's probably all sorts of weird...
I feel sorry for the government because, I mean, how are they going to, you know, enforce these things when the differences between the technology is becoming so thin?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, anyway, this program called Undercurrents was on this past weekend, and the main story was about Kevin Polson. They talk with him for a lot of the piece. They basically portray him as the victim, and they tell his side of the story, how he worked for the government, how he explained certain points against him. Mitnick's mentioned, although, you know, the main thrust of the show is not about Mitnick, but I think it's a good sign that shows like this are on. Hopefully we can get to people at Undercurrents or other such programs, and maybe they'll do something about Kevin and get the word out about that.
I'm really impressed with the media right now. They've been doing some excellent coverage.
Well, you know what's funny? I mean, we had some media coverage. In fact, we had CNBC out there.
Yeah.
Do you want to play the CNBC piece?
Yeah.
We have the CNBC piece that that we'd like to to kind of show you for a little audio preview, I guess. And that's that aired, I think, the day after?
Friday, twice.
And there's a very interesting thing about this, very interesting aspect to this, which we'll get to as soon as we hear it. Of course, I'm not sure this tape deck's going to work, so let's see if it actually comes up. You see, I pressed a button, but nothing happened.
Is the wheels moving?
Here we go.
All right.
Now you see it's still not working.
Deficit due to the effects of the Asian crisis.
The arrest back in 1994 of computer hacker Kevin Mitnick put corporate America on notice about computer security. The 35-year-old is now awaiting trial on numerous computer hacking-related charges. His schemes alleged theft from companies like Motorola, Nokia, Novell, NEC, and Pac Bell as well. And now a movie is in the works about the hacker story. But CNBC's Liz Klayman says a group of hackers want to short-circuit that film.
Waving banners that said Free Kevin and holding Stop Miramax posters, the small but vocal crowd of protesters stood outside Miramax Pictures' New York offices yesterday. At issue, this script entitled Takedown, the story of the nation's most notorious computer hacker, Kevin Mitnick. Mitnick is currently being held in prison without bail, awaiting trial on computer crimes. It's a script these Kevin Mitnick supporters say is libelous and would hurt Mitnick's chances of getting a fair trial.
It might influence the jury. It might change a lot of things in a negative way. I mean, he's trying so hard to at least get a trial, and then this comes up where he's constantly being defamed.
Kevin Mitnick's past reads like a hacker's laundry list. Convicted in 1988 and sentenced to 2 years for stealing computer codes from Digital Equipment Corp. Violating parole 2 years later by breaking into Pac Bell's voicemail system. Fleeing from the FBI and going on the run for 3 years, during which he allegedly stole millions of dollars in software.
Denying that he's ever hacked anything?
No, he's a hacker. He has.
Emmanuel Goldstein, editor of 2600, the Hacker Quarterly, says what bothers him about the Miramax script is that Mitnick is unfairly portrayed as violent.
Whack, he's clubbed on the side of the head. Mitnick wielding the top of a metal garbage can like a weapon.
This is Hollywood, though. They always take poetic license.
This is more than poetic license. This is poetic wounding of a person.
The demonstrators here say they have sent a copy of this illicitly obtained script of the movie to Kevin Mitnick in jail, and that he absolutely hates it.
Miramax's parent, Disney, may not like it either. The controversy comes on the heels of the dumping of $43 million in Disney stock by the Texas Board of Education. The board's complaint that Miramax films have too much sex and violence.
Disney wants to make money, and Disney tries to stay out of controversy. So I think since Miramax has been in a little bit of heat as it is, I don't know how much longer Disney and Miramax are going to be together.
Miramax told CNBC the company had, quote, no comment on the matter. According to the protesters, production starts on the film next week, and they say word is Skeet Ulrich, the star of Miramax's thriller Scream, will play the role of the mythical Kevin Mitnick. Liz Klayman, Today's Business.
While Kevin Mitnick is accused of stealing thousands of credit card numbers and software files, there is so far no evidence that he ever used any of the accounts or sold any of the software.
Straight.
Now, that's the interesting part, that little tag that they put on there at the very end. That was a live tag that came after the story. The story aired at least twice. I saw it one other time, and there was a different announcer who said the exact same thing.
A lot of people saw it. It was, prime time.
Right.
During the day primetime coverage.
Now, it was, by the way, we're aware that it was only in one channel. I think you must have recorded it in mono or something.
Really?
Yeah, it just came up in one channel. But that's no big deal.
Yeah,
small price to pay.
Rush. It happened.
Yeah. It just, just to get this thing on the air was a miracle in itself. So that was the primary major media coverage we got. It was also, there was a story in the Los Angeles Times. There was
Wired.
Something. Wired. I believe the Village Voice is coming up with something as well. And who knows who else. A lot of people are clamoring for the story now that it's happened. But it's
funny, you know.
Yeah, but the thing is, that very day we found out that the day before a new script had been released that addressed quite a few of our issues. It really did in many ways. I just got a copy of it right before the show, so I haven't had a chance to really look it over. But I will say this. The very beginning of the script is infinitely better than the beginning of the last two. Actually, I got another copy between last week's show and this week's show of version two, And that, it was better. It was better written, but it wasn't much better as far as what they say about Kevin, how they portray him.
Yeah.
This one seems to be getting, you know, a lot better, but there are still some major problems. I mean, you know, at the very beginning, they show you how social engineering works. I think they do a really good job. I really do think they you know, portray it well. But the garbage can scene is still in there.
They're not going to take that. It's, you know, it seems like they're almost listening and they're starting to change things, which is good.
But I mean, that's the thing that people are most upset about.
We've been saying that, and the racist comments are still there.
Right, that's the thing that we come up to people and we say that they're portraying this guy as someone who smashes someone over the head with a garbage can lid when, you know, he never met the person, A, and B, he doesn't smash people with anything. So it's pretty silly. I don't know what the point is. I mean, if you go out to see a movie, do you have to see somebody bash somebody with something in order for you to be satisfied?
No.
I think the American public is a little bit more advanced than that. You know, we can probably, you know, do without that scene, especially since it's based on reality and it never happened.
That's why Disney's getting upset with Miramax, because they're consistently putting violence in their films.
Well, I think they're probably worried about, you know, more violence, like, you know, blowing holes in people and things like that, and just bashing with a garbage can.
Pretty, you know,
I mean, that might be a funny thing. They might be making it seem comical. There might be, you know, Three Stooges music playing while it happens.
Maybe poke Shimamura and yuck, 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 you know, kind of.
Yeah, that could be fun. Let's not give them ideas, though, without getting a contract first. But that scene is probably what I would point to as the biggest thing that disturbs people right now. I'm a little concerned with the beginning of the script, which is really all I was able to read was the beginning, and then I looked to see if the garbage can scene was there, because that's always what I do with these scripts, and it was. But at the very beginning, it just seems like Kevin is a bit of a, I don't know, too shadowy, too, you know, too good a criminal. But at the same time, they also make him out to be a victim, which he is. And let me see if I can find the actual...
Yeah, the second version of the script has, like, these weird comments, like, you know, Kevin didn't have a dad growing up, and they kind of make him, you know, you feel sorry for him. I'm wondering if they're trying to, you know, this is the tragic hero, perhaps, or something. I don't know, but
I think they were trying to find some reason. You know?
Like, why does he do this?
Yeah, because in the second version, I'm not sure if this is in the third version, which is actually a shooting script, so that implies they're not going to make very many changes from this point on. Julia Menapace, the person that that Shimamura stole from John Gilmore, and who John Gilmore in this version of the film refers to as stolen property, which I know John Gilmore would never refer to a human being in that way. Basically, she becomes some sort of psychoanalyst, and she's saying how 93% of hackers come from broken homes, and that explains why they're hackers. You know, it's like, yeah, okay, whatever. But she's got all these like psychological reasons why Kevin does what he does. Now, in this particular script, the interesting part is when Louis DePayne, who is Kevin's friend, tells him, and this is after they find a little toy that allows him to listen in on Agent Steele, who is now in the script,
Agent Steele, on
his phone, where he's talking to the FBI, talking about Kevin Mitnick, and revealing that they do in fact want to arrest him for something. DePayne says to Kevin, "It's just a matter of time, Kev, before they knock on the door. They want you bad." And this was before he became a fugitive. And Kevin says, "My parole's up in 3 days." And DePayne says, "They'll be here in 3 days and 5 minutes." So right there, that shows you that Kevin was targeted as somebody that they just want to lock up, you know, just for the sake of locking him up or sending a message. They refer to the New York Times story of July 4th, 1994, and there is bewilderment as to why that story was page one, which was something that we had a major problem with in the first script. The story just appeared, and nobody was asking why, and it made it seem like, you know, that was justifiable, that Mitnick was actually, you know, that much of a threat that he belongs on page one of the paper. Well, now there's some question being raised in the script as to why that is. So, yes, there has been progress made. It appears that they're listening. I think everybody who showed up on Thursday has a lot to be proud of, because...
Definitely.
You know, first of all, everybody behaved themselves really well.
Yeah.
We had riot police there, but they were just passing by.
Yeah, they were on
horses. That was kind of neat.
One of them got a Kevin button. I think his name was Kevin, or he had a friend named Kevin.
Is every cop named Kevin?
There's a lot of people named Kevin. In fact, people were stopping underneath the big Free Kevin banner and getting their picture taken who were named Kevin. They're like, oh, you know.
Oh, that's just great. Why don't we charge admission?
I think we should and donate it to the defense fund, you know.
There's a lot of people named Kevin. I met one today, in fact. Yeah. One of the people that pushes grocery carts outside supermarkets.
Yeah.
Because I was with the van, and the van says Free Kevin on it, and he wanted to know, you know, he thought he was free already, so I gave him a couple stickers, and when I left, he was reading the leaflet, which, by the way, the leaflet is really great. That's something that we're handing out all over the place.
Yeah.
And now something that everybody's... Yeah, you see the Free Kevin stickers everywhere. Everyone's wondering who Kevin is.
Yeah.
Which is exactly where this should be right now. Now you tell them who Kevin is by handing out the leaflets.
Yeah.
And what we're going to be doing over the next couple of weeks is traveling around the country and spreading the word. We went to some theaters over the weekend, and we're handing out leaflets and telling people about Kevin Mitnick. And a lot of people, get this, we pull up with the 2600 van to a theater, right? And we're about to hand out leaflets and buttons and whatever else just to educate people. The very first person we see, this is before we even get out of the van, is a screenwriter. A screenwriter, a famous one, too.
Really?
I won't say what he's written, but it's a real person who wants to do the story right. You know, is fascinated by the story, a big supporter of us, wants to do it right.
Wow.
I mean, that's something. That's amazing. So the people who came in the next couple of hours over the two theaters we went to were extremely supportive. You know how when you hand things out on the street corner, usually people just sort of brush by you? I mean, I don't do that often, but that's the impression I get.
Yeah.
Well, in this particular case, people were coming up to us wanting more, you know, and wanting to know more as well. So it was really cool.
If people still want to get that flyer and download it and print it and put it wherever, they can get it on kevinmitnick.com, www.kevinmitnick.com, as well as some articles from the rally, some pictures from the rally, which turned out really nice.
A lot of pictures, yes.
Yeah, like there was like 40 or 50 of them on there.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I'm sure we'll have a review of the third script up there shortly.
Right.
But certainly, I've heard of a lot of people. In fact, there's a flyer archive. We'll be putting a link on kevinmitnick.com of people who made flyers as well, and they're just going everywhere. Universities, anywhere that you can imagine where flyers should be and could be, that's where they're showing up now.
Mm-hmm. And it's important to get the word out all over the place. People are interested. People are supportive.
Yeah.
I don't think we really ran into anybody that said we were wrong for saying the things that we're saying and
for
attacking Miramax for doing this.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think there's a lot of people in Miramax that feel the same way based on the reaction that, you know, I've seen from various people I've talked to.
Yeah.
I mean, unofficially, of course, because all official contact, there hasn't been any. Miramax just doesn't comment, and
they're totally
calls
silent.
We make to them just don't ever come back to us. But I think eventually we'll hear something from them, I hope, you know. I think the script is a good sign that at least they're trying something, but I mean,
seems
really,
like they're listening.
Yeah.
Someone's listening.
I don't want to speak prematurely because I haven't read the whole script. There could be, you know, there could be Mitnick's Nazi days in there somewhere that hasn't quite made it out yet. I don't know. We have to see exactly what it is. Let's read a couple of letters that have come in. Should the final release of Takedown include the whistling touchtone scene, it wouldn't be the first. In the movie Couch Trip, Dan Aykroyd hums touchtones into a phone while escaping from a mental institution.
Yeah, yeah.
He then clobbers a guard over the head with a trash can lid. Just kidding. So that's kind of fun. Yeah. Here's another letter. Just wanted to say thanks for setting me straight about Kevin. I recently discovered Off the Hook and have been listening to the back issues continuously. Like many people, my whole take on the story was from Marco Spiel in Cyberpunk and what I saw in the news. I had no idea the case had never been to trial and that he was still locked up after all this time. It makes me sick. I think government paranoia about hackers stems directly from fear of technology they themselves don't understand. I have an establishment-type job in that I manage computer networks for a school district, and part of my job is trying to protect my systems from 1,700 little hackers. Where my colleagues freak out at the antics of hackers, I usually try to learn something. I think the Alt.2600 fact should be required reading for any IS professional, and I fear that until one of these kids gets elected president, incidents like Kevin's will continue to happen. Well, let me know if there's anything we out here in the sticks can do to help the cause. Keep up the good work. Well, what do you think people out in the sticks can do to help?
Well, people out in the sticks can, of course, always go to the website and see what they can do. We have a lot of things outlined. They can write to their senators. They can write to their congressmen. They can donate money to the defense fund. They can print out the flyers. That's one of the great things about the internet is, you know, we're doing a lot of things out here, but it's worldwide. Anybody can go and educate themselves and educate everybody else.
That's right.
And there's no such thing as the sticks anymore. I don't know. I think that's a...
Well, there is. There in some
I mean,
places.
I grew up in the sticks, but...
No, you didn't grow up in the sticks. I mean, the real sticks.
I grew up in
places like what we're going to be seeing over the next couple
of weeks. I grew up in the Everglades. I don't know. It was sticky, perhaps. Uh-huh.
So. Well, I think, you know, talk to those other people out in the sticks and get them to realize it. You know,
yeah.
We have one entire town out in the sticks on our side. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know. Thing is, those Free Kevin stickers are going to stay up forever.
Yeah.
They really will. I mean, those good stickers, they stay up for 20 years at a time. So anyone else who's Kevin and needs to be freed is going to benefit from that. Here's another letter. I'm sitting here at the local cyber cafe in Cambridge. That's over in England. And guess what? The BBC is filming a documentary. They are also filming me, so I put up the Free Kevin banner. Hopefully this will work to get a story exposed. They're here doing a story on the history of the internet.
Great. You know, people in Europe don't quite understand what's going on with Kevin. When you try to explain, I mean, you've been over there recently. They don't get it. They're like, what's going on?
No.
Why is it like, I thought this was America.
Right.
You know, and then there was that recent thing in Israel with the analyzer. We got a job and got
so
a...
People are amazed by the things that happen over here sometimes.
Yeah, you know, we're pretty much what everybody strives to be, a democracy, or tries to be. And it's not working out. You know, they don't...
But it's working out in the sense that people are spreading the word, people are demonstrating. To actually come down to Miramax and demonstrate like that for a couple hours, you know, it's not something the average person does. It takes a lot of guts to actually do that. And, you know, I think everybody who went had a good time, too.
Yeah.
Not that it was, you know, that's the purpose of it was, but it was, it feels good to be able to express yourself and know that, you know, you're saying something that you believe in. And it did have an effect. Make no mistake about that. It had an effect. People were walking by in and out of the Miramax, including the president of the Miramax. I don't know if people know that, but he walked in at one point, and they know about it. They know what we're out there. They know our concerns. And thanks to that demonstration, millions more people now know because it got on TV, it got into newspapers. And that's how you do it. That's how you start any kind of movement.
And these are people who never met, which I thought was amazing. These are just people that found out through the radio show here, the website, you know, email. It's, I think, one of the first times that something like this was organized, and these people never met before. There wasn't a, you know, besides the meeting in the city, but a lot of people that were there either weren't there or they didn't know, you know, later. But certainly interesting.
You know who was cool? The lawyer. We had a lawyer come from the National Lawyers Guild.
Yeah.
It's just really comforting to have a lawyer with you when you're demonstrating.
Yeah. And
you know, he can walk up to people and say, no, you can't say that to these people. They can do this. They can do that. They can't do that, but they can do this.
And he was wearing the Free Kevin button and everything. Right. You know, and he gave us a lot of good advice.
He talked to the cops on horses.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was pretty
funny. It was really cool.
He walked up and said, oh, this is going to be calm. They're just computer guys. Everything's going to be fine. And the cops seem pretty...
Here's a sticker.
Yeah.
All right, our phone number is 212-209-2900. We'll be taking phone calls in just about 2 minutes. Stay tuned. And again, that phone number is 212-209-2900. You're listening to Off the Hook, Manuel over here, Phil over there. And the things that come next are going to be rather interesting, too. We're going to be voyaging throughout the land. In fact, there's a piece about this on our website. If you know of an interesting place that we should stop in, we're making a little documentary of our own about what's happening with this whole Kevin thing, with the film, with the movement to get him out of prison once and for all, to the overall mood about hackers in general. And if you have something that you feel can contribute to that, please contact us at a special email address that we've set up, film, F-I-L-M, at 2600.com. We're going to be heading out starting later this week and heading in a general direction of Las Vegas, which is where DEF CON is, the annual hacker convention. That's taking place the weekend after next. And from there, we'll probably be wandering around on the West Coast a bit and various other parts of the country, and eventually we'll wind up right back here. So we know there's lots of stories out there. We know there's lots of things to show people who are interested in hacking and interested in the hacker world and just seeing things from our perspective. So feel free to give us a shout if you know something that's interesting in that particular regard. You've got the script now.
Yes, I have a script.
Okay. And what do you think of it?
Well, you know, of course I couldn't read it in just the midst of that song.
You could if you watched that guy on TV, the speed reader guy.
Read manuals. Read all your favorite publications.
You know, what I don't understand about that is why the guy that's talking to him doesn't just do it himself. You know, it's like, I can't do this. You're incredible. I'm stupid. You know, if it really bothers you, all you have to do is take his course, and then you won't be stupid anymore. But I just think it's funny how the guy interviewing him and the guy that he's interviewing work for the same company.
Yeah.
But that's typical American plasticness.
Some of the things I thought was funny that I saw in, I don't know if it's still in the third revision, but they have Kevin portrayed a little bit different. He, I guess maybe he's more moral? I don't know. He says no to a joint. They offer it to him.
Yeah, in the second version, well, it's interesting because this girl who lives in the apartment with him and DePayne supposedly used to go out with Kevin and now goes out with DePayne. In the third version, it's his wife.
Oh.
And I think there's a hint that they're having an affair, her and DePayne or something like
really?
That. I don't know. I haven't gotten to that part of it yet. But yeah, she offers him a joint and he looks at it, thinks, and says no to drugs.
That's good.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, so I don't
now
know.
He's anti.
You don't see Shimomura shooting up later in the thing, so it's not really like, you know, a contrast of any sort.
And also, Mitnick still uses scanning as a substitute for sex.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, not tonight, dear. I have a modem or something, you know. It's.
No, he's with his girlfriend, and he's like, you know, sitting on a couch awkwardly, and then he says, hey, do you ever scan? And it just becomes really awkward at that point. And then she rebuffs his attempts to get her interested in scanning, and he's crushed, and that's the last he ever sees of her. Yeah, that's that's really,
you know,
silly.
It's funny how they're trying to make him look good in some lights, and then me personally, I think it's getting a little worse for him personally, because they're having him go into the NSA, they're having him with this super virus that can, you know, I'm going to quote from here, you can crash the Air Force with this virus. Hell, you can crash Wall Street with this virus.
That's ridiculous.
You know, if it granted, you know, maybe if they take out the garbage can scene, the racist scene, but now they're having him do something that he didn't do, this magical virus. I mean, he.
Well, you know, I mean, Hollywood has to have its viruses, as far as, you know,
they've
computer
done this
viruses.
Before,
yeah, computer
every
viruses.
Movie, yeah.
Every movie has to have a computer virus that can do all this harm. But why have Kevin be the person that's planting it? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, if you have to go down that road, and I wouldn't go down that road myself, but if you have to go down that road. All right, have your little virus, but don't make Kevin the instigator, because he never did anything like that. You know, that's only fair.
I'm wondering if they're going to change it to have him have to play chess against some supercomputer so the nuclear warheads don't go off or something.
Tic-tac-toe.
Like
that.
Tic-tac-toe.
That's what they're going to play. Okay, Phil, you picked the number last week, I believe.
Yeah,
and
but
you were wrong.
Good job.
You were very wrong. So I'm going to ask you again to pick a number this week.
Last week I picked 3.
You picked 3, and so 3 was you know, it almost makes me wonder, reading the Mitnick script and seeing how Mitnick has all these powers and can, like, you know, make phones do anything, I'm wondering if we're dealing with something like that here, where he can just put himself any place.
I think so.
And, you know, we say the number, and he just puts himself someplace.
I'm scared to pick the number, actually.
Okay, well, and this time we don't say the number out loud. You hold up your hand, or hands if it's more than 5,
all right.
And then I push the corresponding button. And unless he has a camera in here, there's no way he can move his phone call to that line.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah. Okay, I got it. We're ready. Good evening.
Hello.
Oh, it worked.
Wow.
The number was 6, and he was not on that line. How you doing? What's up?
Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering, remember back, like, a couple months ago when the analyzers supposedly attacked the Pentagon, and all of a sudden Janet Reno and the Justice Department all of a sudden submitted a request for more money, requesting more money for
right. It happened right after the California teenagers were accused of hacking into the military at the behest of the analyzer over in Israel. Yeah, and you know, we were asking the same question at the time. Why, you know, where is the story here? This has to be leading up to something. And sure enough, they start asking for all this money to you know, to battle computer crime, like it's a real crisis.
Yeah,
and also I also noticed a very strange and peculiar pattern in the way that, I guess you can call them cyber laws are made,
mm-hmm.
is that, for example, I heard that Tempest keeping your computer like tempest proof so nobody can monitor using tempest monitoring equipment is illegal, and you cannot protect yourself without violating the law.
Well, it sounds like part of the the WIPA thing that just got passed. Again, you know, that has yet to be tested. We don't know how far they're going to push this, or if it's just, you know, some sort of silly wording. But, you know, I think really the way to test it is for us to test it and, you know, refuse to play by stupid rules that don't make any sense.
You know, like massive civil disobedience.
Exactly. I mean, civil disobedience helps stop one war. It can help stop this.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay, bye.
Thanks for calling. That's really what it's coming down to, you know.
Well, you know, I really fear this WIPA thing, because in other countries you can still reverse engineer. So America's going to lose its foothold in technology, because we can't disassemble things that we purchase, and we can't see how they work and see if they're secure and see if they're capable of what we want them to do.
It's ridiculous. It's silly. But it's typical. Something else we forgot to mention in the script, that in the newer versions, some names are protected.
Like, really?
Yeah, like certain corporate names are protected.
Yeah, I heard about this.
Yeah, now Oki is a cellular company that was mentioned quite specifically in the first version of the script. All of a sudden, the name of the company is Noki. Like, it's a mixture of Oki and Nokia.
Nokia, yeah.
So, you know, I have to wonder, now, how come these guys, they probably just had to send out a memo or something and get that fixed. But, a human individual has so much trouble. You know, it makes you wonder who's really controlling things here.
Well, this makes you wonder with the public figure thing. If Kevin's not a public figure, then mm-hmm. they do need his permission.
Right.
And that'd be pretty interesting right before the film goes if someone says, you know, gosh, Kevin, mind if we use your name? And he says yes or says no. Yeah. You know, it could all hinge on his one answer. You know, that would be a pretty interesting outcome of the whole thing.
Yeah. We do know the film will be shot in Wilmington, North Carolina. They're talking late July, early August. And when we know more, you'll know more. Now, it's going to be interesting next few weeks because we'll be on the road. The show will continue, though. Usually when we've gone on the road in the past, we've had repeats on. But this time we're going to try something new. We're actually going to broadcast from far away. Of course, it'll sound like I'm on the phone because I will be on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you'll be here in the studio.
Yeah,
though.
I'll be here trying to.
So you'll sound okay. I'll just sound kind of weird.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll be able to take phone calls. Claude, the engineer, will be here, and he'll have a week to figure that out.
Yeah.
And we'll keep people apprised of the situation as it changes.
Should be interesting.
It will be changing. It's been changing every week. You know, it's been changing radically every week. And this is really something that a lot of people have taken an interest in. And it'll be amazing to see just how it turns out. I mean, the protest was one step. Going to the theaters over the weekend was another. What happens from this point on is it's going to just keep moving us in the direction.
I can't wait to see hear how the rest of the country feels about this.
Yeah.
I mean, we think we're, you know, on
the
East Coast.
Well, based on the mail, you know, people seem very sympathetic about this, and they want to know more. And just, you know, forget the film, just the fact that Kevin has been in prison for 3.5 years. I mean, you know, we could have, the film could be great. The film could, you know, address all of our issues and be perfect, you know, the best film ever made. But Kevin's still in prison.
Yeah.
Still been in prison 3.5 years. No trial, no bail, no visitors. When I say no visitors, I mean no visitors other than immediate family, which really limits it to
blood relatives.
A couple of people.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have that many, you know, immediate family in the first place. And lawyers, which, you know, when you get visits from lawyers, yeah, it's fun, but it's not that much fun. So
I'd be upset if I can only see my family and just my lawyer.
Yeah.
You know?
It's hell. It's living hell. 3.5 years. Just try to picture, where were you 3.5 years ago? You know? Imagine being in the same room, which is basically what he's been in, all that time, not really, you know, seeing the outdoors, not being able to interact with people. And add to that the 2 years before that he was spent living as a fugitive, afraid of being caught, afraid of winding up in prison. And if that's not enough for you, add the few months he spent in solitary confinement in 1989 because he was a computer hacker that was locked up, you know, then for crimes people did not understand and turned out not to really be crimes. You know, he was accused of all these things that just never happened, similar to today. But because people have such a fear of hackers, they say, well, you know, this is something that we have to, react to. We have to lock him up and keep him away from phones, or he'll do something that we don't understand. It's, You know, it's a tragedy.
You know, I spoke with Kevin, and it's kind of funny, but maybe it's not. He's been in so long, I was trying to explain to him the concept of real audio, how we broadcast a show, and he couldn't quite get it because he's been in so long. Real audio didn't come out till recently. So he's like, oh, you don't download the file, you actually listen to it as it downloads, and that's kind of cool.
It's actually been out a while.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
when you think of it, it has been out a while, but
you know, that's
yeah.
When it was debuting, it wasn't, you know, it was still in beta, and he was, you know, going off.
And think of all the things that have happened with the web over the last 3.5 years.
It's more graphical, it's faster, there's information being exchanged a lot better. You know, when I talk to him, I get really depressed that he, you know, this is his hobby, too. This is, you know, he enjoyed computers. And
it's almost like they're getting what they want by making him completely out of touch.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can help by talking to him, updating him on things like that. Not just talking about, you know, his current situation, but also just all the things that are happening that he'd be interested in. It's, you know, it's wrong for somebody to be denied that. Because these are very exciting times. These are times when things change daily. And he should be part of that. He's part of the whole story. All right, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up, please.
Oh, hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering what's going on there because I'm not getting any access to a computer where I am.
What do you mean what's going on there?
Like what are you guys talking about?
Okay, listen, folks. Don't call the show if you don't know what we're talking about, all right? I don't want to be rude here, but we only have an hour, and it's pointless for you to call in and say, what are you guys talking about? Because we'd have to go through the whole thing again just for your benefit. It's a radio show, you know. The concept of radio is you listen to it. Not much point calling us up and being part of the radio show if you're not listening to it. All right. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Manuel.
I shouldn't have hit that button. I knew it as soon as I hit the button. I shouldn't. See, I felt it, though. I felt it on my finger. There's like a burning sensation you get when you push the button that he's on.
Well,
yeah. How do you do it, though? How do you do it? You're Mitnick of the East. That's what you are.
Yeah, Mitnick of the East.
They could write a film about Rebel.
Yeah.
Have you ever hit anybody with garbage can lids?
Have you ever bashed somebody over the head with a garbage can lid?
I felt like doing it once, but I never actually did it.
But you've been bashed yourself many times.
I've never been bashed in my life.
Oh.
But I
there's something you to try. Okay,
well. It's a challenge. But anyway.
Only kidding, man.
You know,
what's going on?
When I call you on my cellular phone, you know, my cellular company, Bell Atlantic Mobile, when I call you and let it ring all the time, they charge you for the ringing. In other words,
they do.
They charge you as it's connecting. Is that because BAI is on a sort of a PBX that the cellular company thinks it's picking up and it's like a DID PBX?
Well, wait, is this only for us or is it for every call you make?
No, it's just for you.
Well, that could be because we use, what is it, TCG now is our local company. They may have a different way of picking up phone calls where it actually, that would be wrong if that's true. I'd like to know if any of listeners
have this problem. Yeah, I mean, I'm paying through the nose for this, but I mean, it's worth it for this.
That would be very wrong. I mean, that's something that I think also is like illegal. So if someone out there contests that for
and you
us,
know, when I contested the phone company, when I contested the Atlantic Mobile, they don't understand. They say,
of course
well,
they don't understand.
But they don't. They said, why did you let the phone ring so many times? And I was trying to explain I was calling a radio show, but you don't really explain. They just don't understand. But anyway, I'd like to mention that I was at the protest, but I sort of got there late. I was sort of busy.
You weren't at the protest. Nobody saw
you. No, I wasn't. I was there, but I was too late, I guess. You left, like, early.
Well,
I was there, like,
2 o'clock.
Depends
what time. We were there from 12:30 to about, what is it, 2:15?
We left.
Yeah. See, I got there after.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, protests don't usually last all day.
Well,
unless it's like a massive
had work
thing.
To do. I had work to do, so.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody tried to take some time to get down there. But, you know, thanks for the effort. We appreciate
it. But I'll be at the 26th. Well, I'll try and be at it. I've been traveling lately, and I've been playing with different phones across the country and, you know, in hotels. I've been, you know.
And they're trying to catch up to you, right?
Yeah, in Pennsylvania, the phones in Pennsylvania and hotels and motels are very secure. You cannot use the local Bell Atlantic operator, nor can you use AT&T or any other carrier. Long distance carrier to make phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
In other words,
Amish people out there. Yeah.
And like New York or New Jersey, you can have the Bell Atlantic operator dial the phone number for you instead of dialing 9 and then the number and getting charged by the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
They just dial 9, have the Bell Atlantic operator transfer you to.
Okay. Listen, I don't want to debate that this is indeed a fascinating subject, but we can't talk about this every week as far as hotel phones and things. Is there anything else you want to say to us?
Not that I can think of, but...
Okay, well, that's fine, then. Thanks for calling. Let's go to another phone call. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Emmanuel, how you doing? It's Tommy.
How you doing?
T-Cat, you know.
What's up?
From MTV. It was a great protest. I congratulate everybody on going to the protest. Glad we could have done that.
Yeah, it was definitely a fun experience.
It was an awful fun experience, yeah. Talking about the WIPO stuff, though, wipeout, as far as we call it, I was in an advanced NT class today over at NetLand, and I started discussing it to them, and I said, look at this, reverse engineering, blah, 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 and I started to show her how I can hack through an NT system, and I cracked all the passwords in our class.
So you got arrested on the spot.
And I said, look, and even before it was 2% done, and I said, and this tests our security here in the building, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, oh, my God. And I said, and they're going to take it away from us. She goes, yeah, and then the Europeans are going to crack us. I said, exactly.
These darn Europeans.
I don't think the Europeans are really the problem. I think we're the problem because we keep making these stupid laws to cripple ourselves.
Hacker Pengo, who was a big problem, you know, because he was dealing with the KGB and stuff. So you never know if it might be...
He didn't really help the KGB as much as Marco seems to think he did.
Yeah, I know. It just turned out to be, oh, we need C++. You know, what the heck, C++ paying $75,000 for it?
Yeah.
No, I don't understand that part of the book. They might have gotten the figures wrong or something.
So anything else you want to leave us with? We want to move on to a few more calls.
That's about it. I just wanted to catch up with you and congratulate you guys.
Well, congratulations to you too. Everybody who showed up, I think, deserves congratulations.
I wish I could have joined you out in DEF CON there, but unfortunately...
We'll all be together in spirit, you know.
You know, all the airlines are up to like $400 now.
Yeah. Oh, I've got an airline story. I'll tell that as soon as I release you.
All right.
I'll tell the horrible airline story. Thanks for calling. I learned something about frequent flyers, okay? Because basically, what I'm trying to do is trying to help a friend out who wants to go out to DEF CON, and I have enough miles to get out there, you know, to take a free plane ride anywhere in the country. So I said, okay, great. I called up the airline, said, is this flight available? And they said, yes, this flight is available. You know, I said, great. I'd like to use my frequent flyer miles to purchase this. And then I heard this, like, organ chord, you know, like the ominous sound music, you know, and it was like all of a sudden the mood changed. There was thunder in the air and the sky darkened. And they said, well, that flight is sold out for frequent flyers.
Oh, for
all of a sudden, I'm being treated as a different type of person. When I enrolled for this thing, they told me that I'd get, you know, treated just like a regular person. I'd have all these privileges. I'd be part of this, like, honor society type of thing where I could call up any time and ask them, you know, to tie my shoe or something, and they'd do it. And now, when I'm finally trying to cash in on it, they treat me like I'm asking them for the moon. And it was basically a very bad situation because then... I had to go through this whole big deal on finding a flight that was open for that. And then, on top of that, when I finally did, I found a totally inconvenient flight. And I couldn't do it at night. I could only do it in the daytime. They close at night, so you can't order it then. Well, at that time, when I finally got the ticket, they said, and we're going to charge you $50 for doing this with less than 21 days. So my free flight now cost me $50. And it's not free anymore, and I'm using up all my money. I mean, that's like...
And you're... You're trapped to what they say what's available
TWA,
for you.
TWA, I'll say it right now. TWA is the airline that did that.
Really?
Yeah.
So on their different flights, if you're a frequent flyer customer or have enough miles, they can be sold out for your particular group?
There's all kinds. You're a second-class citizen, basically.
So
when you get on the plane, I guess they treat you the same.
Are you sure you're going to be sitting in with everybody else, or will it be in the cargo section?
It might be cargo. Who knows? Who knows? But it's really kind of silly the way they do things. A couple of the consumer notes, and then we'll try to take one more phone call. Sprint PCS service has been awful recently. I don't know if people have been talking about this, but everybody I know has been having a lot of trouble. I don't know what the problem is, but calls are being dropped all the time. Basically, I was walking around the city the other day, and I was gauging the success rate. Between 70 and 80% failure rate on calls. And of the calls that you're on, you cannot understand people a lot of the time, and it's just standing still. It's like the signal is a wave that comes and goes, you know, and the tide goes out. And basically you say, I'm on a Sprint phone. People say, oh, I understand. You can't understand anything I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, I Sprint really has to do something about that. Now, OmniPoint, I don't think I'm ever going to complain about OmniPoint again because remember when I went away a few weeks ago to Atlanta and various other places? Seems they didn't charge me for any of those calls I made from there. I don't know what it is if they take like a couple of months to get the billing information, but right now
maybe
no charge whatsoever.
Maybe it's kind of how you get a speeding ticket in another state and it doesn't catch up with
who
you.
Who knows? Yeah. But I'll keep people updated on this. It's a bit of a surprise to me, and good surprise for a change. Right, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
I have two questions. First, I didn't know that Kevin was 30. I thought it was like when I first heard the story, it was like a young kid who hacked into a system, you know, randomly. But he had a prior record, you said. He was on parole or probation?
Yeah.
And he hacked again? I mean, isn't that... I'm not trying to put the guy down, but isn't that a little reckless, knowing you have a record to...
Okay, first of all, before we even get into that, let's assume that he did. Let's assume that he hacked again, that he did everything he was accused of. How much time do you give somebody for something
granted,
like that?
Granted, I don't understand
why. Let's just establish that to begin with.
I agree with you there.
Okay.
I don't know why he's... Isn't there something called the speedy trial clause?
Yeah, well, there is, but lots of times when you're a defendant, you're pressured to give that up so that you can have a good defense. When you have a lot of evidence presented against you and you move too fast, you can't examine the evidence with enough time.
They
so you
still
have to waive the right to a speedy trial.
They still have
that much evidence in the trial?
9.75 gigs.
Just convert that to paper, pages.
Did we try that?
Yeah, we're working on that. It's taller than most buildings.
Taller than most buildings, and he doesn't have access to a lot of it because it's on computer and he's not allowed to use a computer. But, the thing is, did he hack? Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, basically, he expressed curiosity in a lot of things, and I don't think he was doing anything illegal until he was forced to become a fugitive. Because he was afraid of being put in prison again, so he had to go on the run. And when you're on the run and you're worried about being caught, I mean, I know I would certainly want to know what people are saying about me if they're about to catch me.
But was he tried on the first conviction, or did he plead guilty? And do you know if he plea bargained that, or it was an actual trial? He was convicted of the first crime?
I believe he pled back in 1989.
And was on parole.
Yeah.
Parole, that means he did time. If
yeah, no, he was in prison for a year. He was in solitary confinement for several months. So that that kind of thing shapes who you are.
For nonviolent crimes.
Nonviolent
crime.
Okay, and well, that's true. Although you could breach certain, I guess, computer systems that could be devastating. What really scares me is how easy it seems to breach very supposedly secure systems like military.
Absolutely.
The Israeli guy did this supposedly. He got into the Air Force computer system.
Yeah, and
I mean,
he
could
got a job
do that.
Out of it.
What about cyber terrorists, from some other countries that are going to try to sabotage, sophisticated defense systems, or that movie about that kid who hacks into the Pentagon computer? That's not so far-fetched, is it?
Right, and what's really scary, though, is the fact that we learn so little about it. You know, yeah, the systems are wide open, but we're not doing anything. All we're doing is punishing the messengers. Thanks for calling. We're out of time. Very quickly... again, if you're interested in the project that we're embarked in now, which is going across the country, spreading the word about the Mitnick film and about the Mitnick case in general, getting people's reaction to it, making our own documentary, email us if you're on the route anywhere across the country, or even locally, and you have some ideas for things you'd like to see in something like that. The address film, F-I-L-M, at 2600.com. If you want to email us at offthehook, O-T-H, at 2600.com. And if you want to write to us, Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. We'll be back again in some form next week, updating people on the latest in the case and the latest in the script and where things stand. In the meantime, if you want to be part of the Mitnick list, again, send email to majordomo, M-A-J-O-R-D-O-M-O, at 2600.com. In the body of the message, simply say, subscribe, Mitnick, M-I-T-N-I-C-K, and you'll be part of the discussion that plans out what the next step will be. Until next week, Emmanuel Goldstein, have yourselves good night. The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. It couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bump for the best.
This is Donna Neiman of the Development Department at WBAI Radio, speaking to you from our beautiful new studios at 120 Wall Street. I'd like to remind you that our new general information number is 212-209-2800. That's 212-209-2800. For questions regarding your subscription, call 212-209-2845. And if you have questions about your premium, call 212-209-2848. Again, the main number here at WBAI is now 212-209-2800. Thank you for your support, and keep listening to WBAI Radio 99.5 FM in New York.
If you or anyone you know has been unable to finish high school and would still like to pursue your education, this message is for you. New York Career Guidance Services offers GED preparation courses to young people ages 17 to 21. Our program will prepare students to pass the examination for the General Equivalency Diploma. Career workshops, resume preparation, and job referrals will be provided to students who qualify. For more information, call us at 212-996-0161. That's 212-996-0161.